Before we get started with this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me let you know that it's brought to you by Draft.com. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real-life NBA, NFL, or for this podcast purpose, PGA Draft right now. Be done drafting in under 5 minutes and get paid out the day the tournament is done. The PGA version is great. You draft, you enjoy the 4 days, and you collect your money Sunday night. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players, this is the catch, all new players, when they make their first deposit, get entry into a real money draft by using the promo code SDSports. You got to use the promo code SDSports to get that free entry. That's right, playing a real money draft for free by using the promo code SDSports. But it gets even better. For some crazy reason you do not like Draft, they are offering a $100 money back guarantee. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now, but you have to use the promo code SDSports. Void or prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days. Now, welcome to this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast.
Play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah.
Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come to the show.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2018 Safeway Open. Yes, the offseason was long. I know you've never heard that joke enough already, but Jesse, did you enjoy the offseason? Because I enjoyed the offseason. I hope it was long enough for you.
What offseason, Bubba? Oh, my God, dude. I mean, like, it seriously. I mean, it's a whole lot slower here in the fall, but, whew, I mean, there's no offseason in golf, which – for somebody who lives in a cold climate that's 6 months out of the year, it sucks. So even worse, you know, you get to play golf all the time. I don't.
Yeah, you just get teased with it. Like, right. that stuff. Like, I can go watch a round over the weekend and go play Monday morning.
Right.
There's a difference. So I feel your pain, sort of. But yeah. But then again, you know what they say is you get all the seasons and I don't. So
it's not a good thing. Believe me.
Yeah, I couldn't live in the snow. I don't know how you guys do it. I really don't. But that's not what people are here for. I just had to make the stupid joke that everyone said a million times about the offseason. But we're back. I hope everybody enjoyed the Ryder Cup episode with Ryan Baroff. It was very, very good. Jesse, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, man, that was let's just say disappointing, I think is a good way to put it. I really just felt like, I mean, obviously they got outplayed, but I just feel like the Europeans give so much more of a shit than we do. Like, and I don't know if that's because we were playing over there, they had the home team or what, but either way, I just felt like our body language from the beginning. I mean, you know, they got off to a good start and it was just a train wreck.
Yeah, it was really, really bad, and we could kind of both kind of go back and forth on different things we noticed, but you mentioned just like the camaraderie and the body language and all that. They tell stories about like the U.S. They didn't really even know what the matchups were going to be, who you're going to be teamed up with until like the day of or the night before. And, you know, Team Europe, you know, we've always talk about how we're no laying up fanboys, and they had a great podcast because they were there in person. And they mentioned how they have like statisticians in Europe that go out and do like tests on how these guys could play together and the best possible matchups. And the main no laying up guy says he's at the BMW championship in a pro-am with Tommy Fleetwood. And he goes, just kind of joking with him a couple months ago, hey, who do you think you'll be teamed up with? And he just kind of looks to the other fairway as Molinari's walking down it and kind of waves to him. And Molinari waves back. He's like, I guess I should have known right there. And it's just little things like that. They plan ahead. They get to know each other. Rory McIlroy came out and said, we could play with anybody in our locker room. And he basically didn't say it, but said it. You can look at the U.S. and know they can't. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I thought that, okay, so they start off 3-1. Great start. Woke up to that. I called 4-0 to somebody the night before. almost came true, 3-1. I was like, oh, God, this is wait, we might actually pull this off. And then 0-4 in the next bunch. I mean, for me, that comes down to, I mean, in alternate shot, that comes down to the coach and who he's putting, or the coach, mm-hmm. the captain, and who he's putting together as teammates. I mean, it was just embarrassing, like, to get completely shut out in that. And you could just tell the next day, like, it would that was still with them. Like, and it was hard to get over. And I totally get it, but it, I don't know, man. They just, they care. I think it comes down to they actually care more than we do. Now, with that being said, the course was ideal for their guys. And that's totally cool with me. I mean, that's part of hosting it. You get to set it up. You get to, you know, you get some advantages. And when we bring it back over here in 2 years, you know, we'll make it long as hell and wide fairways and easy pins. But I just think that they got, I mean, I don't know. Like, our team's form was bad coming in. Phil was awful. Reed was awful. You know, it was just a clusterfuck.
Well, and like you just said it there, they set the course up for them. JT played it. He played well. He finished, we talked about seventh, tied for seventh when he played in the French Open. And, you know, Furyk went over there with some other guys and played it before the British Open. They knew what the course was going to be for the most part. I think a lot of that should have been factored in with the captain's picks. Like, I know Phil, it's like people are saying it's kind of a courtesy thing, but he's playing horrible golf. Why are we wasting a pick on stuff like that? Tiger, as great as he's playing, was absolutely gashed. They were showing he could barely walk by the second day. He was falling asleep at the end of the days. I guarantee you, if Furyk, as good of friends as they say he is with those guys, if you walk in and go, hey, can you guys be like assistant captains? We could use your leadership out there, but we need someone that can actually play golf. Like, guys that can hit their irons, can play a short game. That's why I loved Webb Simpson. And it might not have worked. I hear you chuckling, like, telling Tiger Woods and Phil not to play. Probably wouldn't
have gone over very well. I totally agree with you. I'm on the same page, man.
It's like there's got to be a point where we separate, like, okay, these guys are great for the game, and then these guys can actually win us matches. Like, there's a difference involved in the situation where it seemed like when those picks came out, and we knew it. We talked about it. It's not a driver course. Why are we keep grabbing bomber after bomber after bomber? And then why are you matching up two bombers to play together in a best ball format? That made no sense.
Well, that, but I mean, like, DeChambeau only goes out for the alternate shot matches. He didn't play best ball. And yeah. I mean, he's so weird. I just don't know how that's a good fit for him. And I mean, you go down the list. It was just, but I mean, you know, props to the Europeans though, too. I mean, they played well. It just sucks when they're winning holes with pars, you know, and our guys are making bogeys and doubles. And it's just it's frustrating to watch. But, you know, hats off to those guys. I mean, they give a shit and you can tell, and they got it done. They got it done.
And like you said, it is pretty embarrassing. We deserve to lose because they kicked our ass. There's no sugarcoating that. That was a beatdown. And you're right. In a format like that, if you can't make par, you don't deserve to win. That's pretty freaking simple. Oh, yeah. Like, if you're the best of the best, you should be making pars. You played in enough scrambles. I played in a two-man scramble over the weekend. If you weren't making pars or better, you were not winning the tournament. It's very, very simple how this format works. And if you're the best of the best, this shouldn't be a problem. Like, individual matches, sure, random things happen. You get hot for a day. I get it. But like you said, when they swept us in the afternoon on Friday, my plans of watching as much golf as possible on the weekend slowly became, okay, I can get some honey if I need to get some brownie points. Like, I had the feeling like coming over that mountain was going to be very difficult. And when they got it to 10.5 and 9.5 on Saturday, there was that glimmer of hope until you saw who was left on the course and you're like, okay, never mind. No,
for sure.
It was tough.
Yes, it was.
A couple more things and we'll kind of move on because we talked a lot of Ryder Cup even before we started recording, but we talked about the Patrick Reed article that came out in the New York Times, and there's been a couple other kind of off spins of the Patrick Reed info. And there's a contingency of people that hate Patrick Reed and a group of people that really like his fiery and his grit and everything. And some people will point that he played horrible and he shouldn't talk. At the same time, I see where he's coming from. Like, if people look at the deeper meaning of what he's saying, to me, it makes a ton of sense. What's your thoughts on Patrick? Surprising that he bit his tongue in the main press conference, which is pretty impressive for him. But B comes out and he does say a few things without completely throwing everybody under the bus, but basically says we need to definitely do things different. It's the best way I can put it.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's frustrated. So, he, you know, with him, he's brash anyways. And you know, he's got a significant other who isn't necessarily the nicest person from what I've heard. I don't know for sure, but just, you know, hearing through the grapevine, all that kind of thing. But, you know, it's frustrating, I'm sure, for him to be so dominant with Spieth. And we talked about this last week. I was like, you know, don't you expect Reed to be with Spieth? And it, you know, no, he's probably gonna be with JT. And that's just odd to me because they won 11 out of the last 12 matches they played together. Mm-hmm. So there's something either going on there with Spieth or, you know, I don't know if you're dropping the ball on it. I don't know what it is, but that's odd to me. So I get where he's coming from. I think you could always go about it in a better way, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And, you know, it's typical sports, not just golf, any sports. When you lose to something where you're the favorites, you were the guys who are supposed to win, there's always going to be a million second guessings you can make on anything that took place that went wrong. And in this case, a lot went wrong. So there's a lot of places they can look at. The only thing I would request, and, you know, again, stuff happens and Europe played great. Like, I don't want to take away from Europe. They kicked ass. It's only fitting for the AP podcast that Molinari and Fleetwood dominated the Ryder Cup. Like, for anybody that's listened to this podcast long enough, we've been going for over a year. That's our boys.
Yeah, for sure.
It was tough. And we said it even last week. We love Europe. It's hard not to root for them. Like, they are some really good golfers. But the only thing I want to see, and I don't know if they could do it the right way without their emotions getting involved, I would love somebody that could really keep it together in an interview process to sit down with Jim Furyk and just ask legit questions and let Jim, like, with no emotion getting overplayed, just ask him, what was your process here? What was your process? Just so you could get an idea of what really went into it, because maybe there was something that made sense to him that we didn't see, because we're not behind the curtains. That's what I'd like to hear.
Well, hopefully the committee does that. I mean, I think you always got to do an autopsy, you know, after it's over with. And they thought they had righted the ship. We you can't really debate. We have more talent, but, you know, a lot of times on the golf course, especially in match play, man, it comes down to kind of some heart, grit, guts, and how bad do you want it? It just looked to me like the whole entire week, like they wanted it more. And
yeah,
it's, you know, what are you going to do?
Okay, last thing, we'll move on to the Safeway Open as we have people actually watching live. So we'll get to what they want to hear. The 2020 Ryder Cup, Whistling Straits, Wisconsin. Yeah. I'll be going with the group. I have friends with houses in Milwaukee and a cabin about 20 minutes from Whistling Straits. A, you're invited. B, a lot of these guys are going to be on the same team for the next few Ryder Cups. Like, this is going to be the U.S. squad. Yeah. Like, you'll obviously take Tiger out. Maybe Tiger makes one more, actually. I'm not going to count that out. Take Phil out. Phil's done. Yeah. There might be a couple moving pieces, but for the most part, the core is going to be the same. Just first glance, we can bring this back in 2 years. What do you think? Because Euro's going to be a little weaker, but we said that a year ago when they kicked our ass. So
the Europeans are definitely older. So, you know, I mean, Rose is – he's obviously in really, really good form right now, but he's also in his, I think, high 30s. Casey – Stinson's 40 something. So, you know, are they going to have some up and coming guys who step in? I think that when they come over here, that we will heed their warning to us, as far as they will set the golf course up to favor ourselves. And that's the way it should be. So I will take you up on that offer to go to Wisconsin in 2 years. And then also, you know, I think we bring it back, but, you know, it's 2 years away. Well, who knows what'll happen between now and then.
My sad thing is, as much as I want to win that one, obviously I so want to win in Europe. Like, this is like, yeah, Rome 2020. I'm trying to be like, hey, darling, do you want to go back to Rome? We're looking for a honeymoon. Like, we can have a lot of fun there. I might miss you for like 3 days, but we can have fun. that's a long ways away. I might even be married, man. Who knows? let's get in to the first DraftKings event of the fall swing of technically the new season. I don't know why they do it this way, but this is how they do it, the way the format works out. So the 2018-2019 PGA Tour season, it is heading to the Napa Valley, to the 2018 Safeway Open. Jesse, why don't you give us some past event history?
Yeah, if it would pull up. Oh, there we go. All right, so obviously played at Silverado. Is it Country Spa, Country Club?
What's the official name of this place? Country Club Resort and Spa. It's massive.
So it's been played every year here since, I believe, 2014. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Something like that. Yeah, it's been moving around in the Silicon Valley for a while.
Yeah, but it's been here for a minute. So last year, Brendan Steele won. He beat Tony Finau by two shots. The year before that, Brendan Steele won. He beat Patton Kizzire by a shot. And then Emiliano Grillo, Sangmoon Bay, and Jimmy Walker before that. And it's the scoring is going to get pretty low here. We're going to be mid to high teens. It's not going to be a difficult track, but you have played it. So,
yep. Let's talk course preview because I had the luxury of playing it a few months back, little golf trip to Napa, and they have two courses there. They have the South course and the North course. North course is also called the tournament course. And we were with the members, so we got to play the tournament course on a Sunday morning. And it's pretty cool because the Safeway hole signs are still up everywhere, but they don't have those tee boxes out there because they're even farther back than the blacks.
Right.
But when I'm walking the course, on most holes, there's not much room behind the blacks. So they're, you know, some might play a little longer, but all in all, it's a par 72, 7,200 yard course, which is not that long. What this course does so well, and what I found it really interesting to be, it's very, very scoreable, like you said, and that's why a lot of the recent web.com grads will do, could do well here if the jitters aren't too much for them. But it's really narrow fairways. It's a lot of tree-laden fairways. If you kind of go left or right, you're going to be in the trees. You're going to have to punch out. There's no playing out of it. It's definitely at least a stroke penalty. It's a lot of straw you're on. It's not like Augusta straw, but it's a lot of stuff like that. You're going to get in – it's a penalty if you miss the fairway, basically. The rough wasn't too bad unless they grow it out a ton, but it really it should be very, very favorable. If you can bomb it and not completely spray it, you're going to be okay. There's a reason why Brendan Steele's won it recently, three wood off the tee. It's all you really need. This is for most holes. There's a lot of like short par fours out there. There's a dog leg on the back nine that if you hit it like 280 and leave it on the right side of the fairway, you got like 100 yards in to an elevated green. That's a very, very birdieable hole. There's a lot of holes like that. Very friendly par threes. Not a lot of trickery. There's the par 311. It's right by Johnny Miller's house. You have to go over some water. Still not crazy tricky. There's a handful of bunkers. Again, it's a trend. It's not a tricky golf course at all as long as you stay accurate. If you're accurate, they're going to torch this course. Par fives are all reachable in two. The greens are very fair, good speed, not a ton of undulations, really. It's POA greens. So the later in the day, those greens are going to change. They're going to grow a good amount. Footsteps will be an issue because I play on POA. That's all I play on out here. And you hear about it with all the pros. The later tee times will get affected by that, but they'll roll very, very pure out there, as you expect from a tournament course. The part I wanted to mention, which is really, really cool, and you'll see it in a lot of the broadcasts. Well, I guess cool might not be the right word, but it's going to be cool to see how they broadcast it. If people need to remember, it was this time last year, about an hour after the tournament ended on Sunday, the wildfires in the area blew through. And they started outside of Napa, and you can go through all the Sonoma and Napa Valley, and you'll see certain areas that are still black and now newly growing. But when I went through the course, there's ditches and drains all throughout the course, and the fires blew right through those. So all of that vegetation was all dried up weeds. That's why it blew right through those. And then the trees by those, you'll see black on all the trees, but it left the course beautiful. Anything that was green, it didn't touch. So if you're not really looking for it, and there's certain holes, you'll never even notice it. But then there's also holes when you're going around that used to be surrounded by houses. The houses are gone. There's remnants of them. And they've been starting the repair process about 2 weeks before I played it. So about 2.5 months now, they've been starting to repair house by house. There's a ton of houses that aren't there anymore, obviously. So that'll be interesting to see how they kind of approach that. They'll probably be a good fundraiser for that. But it'll be a different feel to that, kind of an ominous feel at the same time. But you wanted the course preview, and then that'll be part of it to see that on the course. But very easy, very scoreable, accuracy. Francisco Molinari would torch this course, but he's not playing, unfortunately. But Kyle Stanley would torch this course. He's not playing, unfortunately. But there is a great field, a lot of guys we really like here, and a lot of course history, actually, which we'll get to shortly. Real quick on the weather, there's a southern storm coming through, and Northern California actually got – they kind of went around where I'm at, hit Northern California yesterday and possibly tomorrow, and then scattered showers around the weekend. It should miss most of the tournament, maybe a little on Thursday, Friday-ish, but not a ton. It's going to be very, very humid, so the ball's going to fly even more. I don't see any real issues other than that, though. So, and if anything, it'll kind of help it from not rolling out too much if you kind of hit a little wayward drive so you can attack the course even more. It'll play just like a web tournament. What are the key stats you're looking for this week, Jesse?
Before we get there, did when you played it, what did you score on the 11th hole, that par 3 where Johnny Miller?
I actually was the only one in our foursome that greened it, so I two-putted for par.
So he did. Did he come out and tell you like that? How you should have played it a little bit better?
No, the funny part is I was told his house is up for sale, and honestly, I hope they showed him. Like, they have to show it on the broadcast when, like, because you go, you walk around the water to get to the green, and if you're staring back towards the tee box on the left side of the house, and it's got this giant patio with these. It looks like a Willy Wonka project, like all these like umbrellas and crap. It looks like mushroom tops. It's, you can tell he had a lot of fun in the 70s and 80s. A lot of fun. Like, it's definitely decorated. Like, some stuff went down in the 70s and 80s. That's all I got to say. Like, it still might go down the way Johnny talks. He might puff on that little that pin a little too much sometimes, and he might enjoy the patio.
Sorry to get off topic. I thought
No, it's fine.
So key stats for me this week. Shots gained tee to green, greens in regulation, proximity. Strokes gained, ball striking as well, and then DraftKings points and course history. There's several years of it here. Obviously, there's a two-time defending champion here, so course history.
Yeah, course history is going to be really big. Like you said, a two-time defending champion that he's only $9,000, which is pretty funny.
Right.
But when you look at the past event here at the Safeway Open – it's not going to load now. It's fan share stopped wanting to work. Well, we'll look at the last three events of course history here, or last three events, DK point scoring. You're going to see some really interesting names. So take it with a grain of salt, but basically current form coming in, Tyler McCumber, a web.com guy, but Mackenzie Hughes, David Hearn, Johnson Wagner is actually fourth in the field in recent DraftKings scoring. You got Adam Hadwin's fifth, Ricky Barnes, Hudson Swaffer, HV3, Joaquin Niemann, and Alex Proulx. That basically tells you what you're looking forward to here at this event. So that's just recent three events. I'm not going to go to six events. If those are the three events, I don't want to see the six. But the Safeway deal is not loading for some reason. That's kind of bugging me a little bit. But we'll just leave that alone for now. And let's get into the DraftKings, Jesse.
Yep.
We'll start off with the 10K and above prices. We have six guys. You have Patrick Cantlay leading the way at 11-6. Brant Snedeker, a previous champion at 11-3. Phil Mickelson, fresh off his domination in Europe at 10-9. Ryan Moore at 10-7. Joaquin Niemann at 10-3. And Emiliano Grillo at 10,000. Who are you looking at up here, Jesse?
I mean, really, for me, there's only two guys in play with a potential third. Cantlay at 11-6. There's a couple things with him. Obviously, he's kind of the – I mean, you would have to say he's the class of the field here as far as – recent form, you know, if you want to go that, his putting splits on POA aren't great, but he is the highest price, so most people will fade him, so he should come in a little bit under owned. And then for me, Joaquin Niemann, I would take Joaquin Niemann over Cantlay, especially in cash. But if you're playing GPP, you know, I mean, they're probably pretty similarly equal. Niemann before his, I guess, layoff here recently, because he didn't play in the web.com finals or anything, did he?
He didn't have to get his full tour card already.
Yeah, so he's played – the last time he played was the Wyndham Championship, which was basically 6 weeks ago. A lot of time off. He played well then, but I still like him, even at that price. Grillo's okay at 10,000. You know, the three middle guys, or the three old guys, I guess you would call them, Moore, I can't do it at 10-7. Phil, no. Coming out from France, all the way across to California, no thank you. And then Sneds, maybe, but I'd rather not. So for me, it'd be Cantlay and Niemann here with a full fade for sure, 100% on Mickelson and Moore.
Yeah, Mickelson's completely out. But Cantlay, I do like at 11-6. He's probably the best golfer, or one of the best golfers in this field by far. Thus the pricing. That makes total sense with everything you had to say there, so I'm not going to go too much farther there. Joaquin Niemann is the other guy I had here at 10-3. I think he's very, very good. Grillo's name's getting used a ton already. He's made 3 of 3 cuts here with a win, but I really like Cantlay and Niemann as well. I don't mind Ryan Moore just because I don't think anyone's going to own him up here. I really don't. He's got a T17 and a T10 in his two appearances here. He came in, you know, a T71 and a miscut in his last two events. But prior to that, was playing pretty well in better fields than this. And he's a really, really good iron player. So I could look at him if you're making a bunch of lineups. But if you're only making a couple, you got to look at Cantlay and you got to look at Niemann. And I think Niemann might be the chalkiest of the bunch at 10-3 because that seems like a pretty friendly price for a guy that was paying as well as he was and as popular as he's been in this price range. So it'd be very interesting to see how that one plays out. Again, if you're looking for ownership projections, check out fansharesports.com. A lot of great stuff there that we really, really like every week for football and PGA. So go check them out. Let's get into the 9K range, where we have the likes of Danny McCarthy, Adam Hadwin, Abraham Anser, Bo Hostler, and the defending champion, Brendan Steele. What do you like to hear, Jesse?
This is kind of an odd – well, it's an odd field. So, I mean, it's obviously not what we're used to looking at. So this range is odd to me. But I would take some Anser at 9,300. I'm not a huge fan of this region. But obviously, Brendan Steele at 9,000, I mean – what do you think? Over under 25% for him this week?
Yeah, that's the weird part. I'd say it's going to be – I'd say pretty close. I'm not going to say over just because he's been playing so bad.
Yeah, he's not been playing good at all. It's really odd.
Atrocious. But, very friendly courses for a three-wood.
Well, but I went back and looked at like kind of his form coming into his last two championships here, the last two times he's won, and it's not been good. Like this is his swing – the swing season is his season. Like this is when he starts to play – I guess better. So at 9,000, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think he's worth a look at 9,000. Form is not good, but course history is. I mean, he can't really get any better.
Yeah, he's made four cuts here, back to back titles, T17 and T21. That's pretty damn good at $9,000.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't hate that at all. Abraham Anser is the other guy I was looking at. You know, finished the year very, very strong. T37 here last year. Really fits a course like this pretty darn good. You might hear some people talk Bo Hostler because there's a lot of people that love Bo Hostler. But the thing with Bo is he had a couple of nice weeks throughout the season, but he's like a T30 guy. You got a $9,100. You need more than that. He was $7,100 then all day long. But $9,100, you need him to contend, and maybe he will. But I'd rather go Anser. I'd rather go Steele. I'm going to do a lot more of my differentiating in the sevens and the sixes. I think there's a lot of different ways to go down there. So up top, I'm not going to get too cute in the nines and the 10K range. Let's go to the 8K, where we have a handful of golfers. We have Luke List, Kevin Tway, Ollie Schneiderjans, Chris Kirk, Bud Cauley, Sung Moon Bae, Harold Varner III, Peter Uihlein, Russell Henley, and Russell Knox. So we got a pretty good group of guys here. And, you know, when you look at a field like this, you got to wonder, how did some of these guys get in this price range? That was one question I had to myself. But if I'm looking at a couple to pick and choose from, I like Kevin Tway at $8,700 because everyone's going to go to Luke List. I think he's a really good pivot off of Luke List at $8,800. Luke's great. If he can putt, he can tear this course apart. But at the same time, I think Tway can do just the same. But the guy I really like is Chris Kirk. That's the guy we were riding a lot towards the end. He's made three of three cuts here, T30, T8 in his last 2 years, coming in really good form. And again, you say really good form, like you said with Cantlay or with Neiman and some other guys, a lot of these guys have had a few weeks off. Like there's a good rest period here. So, you know, good form could disappear, and then we could all be just talking out of our rear ends by the time this is all said and done. But what we're going off of here is Kirk playing really, really well, and a guy that fits these small courses very good at $8,600. So I like Chris Kirk quite a bit in this range. Sung Moon Bae, you know, he's won here before, and he finished at the W and got his tour card on the web.com, played really, really well there. So you could take a look at him at 84 if you want, especially when everyone's going to be on HV3 at $8,300. I think he's going to be super chalky this week at that price point, but that's just me. And then Russell Henley, I think, is very, very solid at 81 as well. I think he should be priced higher than this price point alone. I think he's worth some value and could have some success at a course like this. What do you like in the 8Ks?
Yeah, I mean, I think List is okay. I do like your take as far as he's going to be popular. I've already seen Mayo kind of talk about him a little bit, so that usually translates into more ownership. I'm all over Chris Kirk, and it's not really because of his form coming in, because I mean he played okay at the end of last year, but it's nothing like stellar. But he's played this golf course pretty well, 30th and 8th in his last two events here, and you know he's not missed a cut since April of last year. His last missed cut was the Houston Open, April 1st. I probably used him as a one and done that week, and that's probably why. But other than that, I mean I'll be eating the Harold Varner chalk. He's going to be one of my top owned guys, most likely. You know, he was playing really well at the end of last year. And I mean, I think he was higher priced than this in some better events. He's made three cuts here. I mean, at the Wyndham Championship, he was $8,900. I would argue that that's a better field than here. And he's not missed a cut since basically June. So I'll be all over. I'm all over Varner, and I'll eat the chalk there. And then, like you were talking about, get a little bit different elsewhere.
Yeah, I don't hate it if you're any different. Yeah, he's definitely a very good play at that price point, like you mentioned. The last few events when he was on his really big time hot streak, he was a lot lower price. So yeah, or higher price. So definitely agree with you there. Let's get to the 7K range. We got a couple guys here. JB Holmes making a Safeway Open debut. Cam Davis, Duffner, Landry, Lovemark, Fratelli, Ches Reavy, Malnati, Mahan, Danny Lee, Bronson Burgoon, and Kevin Streelman at 7,500 and above. Who you liking in that range?
Yeah, I mean, for GPP, I think JB Holmes is okay. In this field at that price, he is a better golfer than what he's been playing recently. But whether or not he can turn that into something, I don't know. I mean, he finished 49th at the Dell, which was his last start, but he's got like just so many miscuts. He's sketchy, but so GPP only for me. Landry, for me, is in play this week just because of course history. See, the last couple of years, I know he played, I think he's only played here one time. Is that correct?
Last year.
Yeah. So coming off that, obviously, and he started to figure it out at the end of last year. Obviously, he won and then kind of went downhill and then kind of brought it back. So Landry's in play for me. I'll probably use him some. We stopping at 75.
Yeah.
Did you say 75? Yeah. Chez, your boy, from a course history perspective, another guy I like a lot, but I'll let you harp on him some more. I think Bronson Burgoon is in play. I think Bronson Burgoon is okay. He's in play. I mean, he's kind of sketchy, but at this price, you can take some chances. And in this field, I think you can, you know, take some more chances. Made his last two cuts. So, you know, we'll see, obviously, as far as he goes. He's not a great Poa putter. He puts better on other services, but I think he's worth a chance there at 7,500. The stats are lining up. I mean, he's 13th in the field over the last 24 in tee to green. So,
not bad. Yeah, he is a boomer bust type of guy in GPP, so I can definitely see that being an option for you. Some guys I'm looking at, Jamie Lovemark. I'm just afraid he's going to be chalky. That's why I'll have to wait and see here. But he's a guy, if he stays accurate, can just destroy a course like this. So I think it's 7,700 bucks. Lovemark's very interesting. I do love Mr. Ches Reavy. Like you said with Brendan Steele, Ches is a West Coast swingy type guy.
Yeah,
we saw him play well all the way through Phoenix, and then it kind of fell apart. And then towards the end of the year on kind of those smaller courses, he came back. He finished with a T38, a miscut, a T20, and a T12. He's made four or four cuts here, a T13, T22, T17 in the last 3 years. He lines up very, very nicely on courses like this at 7,600 bucks. I think he should be a cash game staple unless something's way out of whack with him. But I think he's a really, really good player with a chance to contend at least top 10 at 40 this week. Yeah. So I like Ches quite a bit. And Peter Malnati, I think I mentioned him at this tournament last year. He's kind of a guy that likes West Coast as well. He's made five straight cuts on tour, or between the web and the PGA. And then he's T30 and T35 here his last 2 years at the Safeway. So for 7,500 bucks, you got a little stability there that I can see. Streelman's another West Coast guy. He plays really well on the West Coast. At 7,500 bucks, can have fun in a short course. I think he's in play for you as well. And then that's all I have for 7,500 and above. Those are the kind of the four guys I'm looking at right there. But Ches is definitely one will be in my core for the weekend. Let's talk 74 to 7,000. There's a lot that I'm not going to even read them off. But the ones I'm looking at here, Sam Ryder at 7,400 bucks. This is the guy we were enjoying when he was in the 6Ks last year. I think he fits a field like this very, very well. Coming off some five plus straight cuts. He did miss the cut here on last year, but I believe that was his first time coming off the web. So a little more familiar with the course, a lot to like here. Very, very good ball striker, very good iron play, very good tee to green player at 7,400 bucks. He can contend in a field like this. So I like Sam Ryder quite a bit. Marty Party Laird, if you believe in course history, 4 for 4 cuts with three top 17s or above. So he's a guy that you'll hear a lot. I don't know if you can stomach him, but he plays really, really well here. Nick Watney, he's a Northern California guy, made 2 of 2 cuts at this event, coming in pretty good form. Just doesn't have that big finish form, so you have to be careful there at 7,200. But another good ball striker, tee to green specialist there. We have Mr. Luck coming off the web.com, making his first appearance, played really, really well on the web.com tour at 7,200 bucks. One of the cheaper web guys I don't hate at all. Cheston Hadley, I'll keep going in a minute, but I want to flat out ask you, how the hell is Cheston Hadley 7,200 bucks?
He's been awful.
So is Brendan Steele.
Yeah, that's very true. Obviously, Brendan Steele's won twice in a row, but I don't know, man.
He finished T3 last year.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, obviously, most people probably listening to this remember Hadley was a thing. He finished third, second, fourth in a row starting with this tournament last year. So he was in a really good fall swing and then just didn't do shit the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think it's $7,200. He's a GPP play for sure. He's one of those guys that definitely can just go off the rails and finish plus eight and miss the cut. But he's also a guy that T3 last year, there's no doubt the guy can go low. He definitely could be a great GPP play at 72. Another one I like, I won't go deep into him. I'll let you talk about him. But Joel Dahlman at $7,100. That screams we got to pay a little attention to that one there. Cam Champ coming off the West Coast, the web.com at $7,100. He finished really, really, really well in the web tour. One of the top driving guys and accuracy guys on the web at $7,100. And then Adam Shank, your other boy I'll leave alone, but only $7,000. I think there's some upside there. His last three tournaments he played in, T8, T2, T9. So a lot of good form coming in this one. But obviously coming down the farther than the sevens, a lot more web guys, a lot more kind of questionable guys, but definitely some upside guys down there that I like. So for me, like Sam Ryder, be a main one, Hadley, Dahlman, Shank would be some of the clicks, some of the web guys. What about you?
Yeah, Ryder, I'm on for sure. Hadley is okay. Dahlman, man, I tell you what, like, so Dahlman, obviously, I was on him last year, and I just kept riding it all the way to the end. And I mean, we crashed and burned.
Yeah.
So I don't know, to be honest with you, if I'll be able to go back to him. His stats line up really well, but I don't know what happened to him at the end of last year. I mean, he lost so many shots in the last two tournaments and missed the cut in both. So I'm not really sure about that. I mean, maybe he secured his card and kind of let up, and I don't know, but I don't know if I can do it. One guy who is super interesting to me is Brian Stewart. And it's from a course history perspective, and it's like his finishes here aren't that good. Let me get those pulled up real quick. But he's not finished well here, but just what I look at from course history-wise, so he's 62nd miscut the last three times he's played here. Coming off the 31st and a 25th his last two times out, Dell and Northern Trust, a few miscuts sprinkled in there, but he just pops on doesn't necessarily pop, but he stands out from what I'm looking at usually here. So I think he's an interesting super low-owned play that I'll probably play in a bunch. Glover at $7,100. We all know that he's got some motivation at home. And another guy.
I just got that.
Another guy that's interesting to me is Cameron Champ. He hits it like 350 off the tee. Now, I don't know if that's going to work out here. And I don't know if this is his type of course, but just keep your eye on him because he's an up-and-coming big-time golfer on the PGA Tour, most likely, assuming he can keep it together. And that is about it for me. I mean, like, Sam Burns is okay. Some JM would be all right, too. But I don't know. Like, it's obviously, this is the time to take some shots with some of these web.com grads. But do you do it now or wait a tournament and see how they, you know, everything pans out? That's the question, because some of them are going to get on this big stage and it's not going to work out for them. Some of them are going to shine. So it'd be interesting to see who does that.
Yeah, it'll be very, very interesting. There's going to be a ton of them here, like in the 6K range. A handful of names, ton of names here. Just a couple I'm looking at, you know, if you don't want to go to web.com-y. Yeah, guys like Brandon Harkins, who we played quite a bit last year. He's only $1,600, had really good success in the tour last year. And he finished T9 here last year, so if you want to talk course history, he's very much in place. A guy you run a lot towards the end is Steve Berwinski. He's 2-for-2 cuts here at 69. Yep. Ted Potter Jr. has actually played well here on his one event, but he's a West Coast guy as well. We finished T28 here at $6,800. Like we always talk about in the 6K range, give me guys that make cuts, and we can work from there. Yep. My boy T-Dunks, he might not be on him. He finished T5 here last year. He's only $6,800. Steven Yeager is one I really like down here at $6,700. Started to really get into good form towards the end of the season. T30 here last year. He loves courses where you can kind of wedge stuff in it and make it a birdie fest. We talked about that before. There's a handful of others. I'm not going to name all, but Merritt, Connors, Silverman, Van Aswagen. There's a ton. We can talk about them in the Slack chat later too, but who are you looking at in the 6K range?
Yeah, there's like 1,000 golfers down here, so pick your poison. But for me, Richie Wierenski, you already mentioned him, so yeah, I'm on him as well. I think David Hearn is kind of interesting at $6,800. He's He's high up on what I'm looking at here. He's showing as number one in proximity over the last 24 rounds. I'm not sure if I believe that or not, but Duncan is definitely playable. West Coast Potter, I like it. I just gave him a new nickname. But I was looking at him earlier, and West Coast Potter, I think, is playable. Corey Connors is a guy that I like quite a bit down at $6,700. Moving down the list, a guy just because I will keep my eye on him, and he's actually, his proximity numbers coming in are pretty good. Is Josh Teeter. He's a web.com grad. I actually texted with his caddy just to see if he was on the bag this week, and he said he was. So I'll be rooting for them, and I would consider playing him for sure at 64. And another guy who just, for whatever reason, this course history stuff I look at, John Curran. He's basically min price, $6,200. So if you're looking to, you know, get strange, miscut 26th, miscut 8th in his last four appearances here, and 1,000 miscuts in a row on tour. So this would be the year, if you believe in, you know, patterns, that he makes the cut, because he missed the cut last year. So he's miscut top 25 basically. Interesting at 6,200 if you're super desperate deep looking.
Since we've gone through the players now, before we get to our kind of core and everything, with the field like this, pricing like this, we usually talk about, you know, we like to go balanced a lot or take a guy at top. You could go really stars and scrubs here if you wanted to. Like, you could take a chance with a couple 6K guys or six and low sevens. What kind of, you know, at first look, things can change throughout the next couple of days, ownership wise and whatnot. How do you think you're going to approach this slate?
Yeah, it'd be more balanced for me. And I'll talk about it more here when we hit the like core plays or whatever. But that's for me, like, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to go up and pay $11,600 for Patrick Cantlay and then take a chance with somebody way down low. I think getting six of six through here, I'd say it will be low if I was guessing, because we're getting into a brand new season, bunch of brand new golfers. The data is not there yet for most. So I would concentrate on getting six of six through.
And FYI for the listeners out there, this is the best time to make money in golf, because everyone's focusing on the NFL. So enjoy this.
They're focused on the NFL, but you also got some new people kind of just throwing their, you know, they NFL want a little money on the NFL. Right, yeah, and they're just going to throw a little bit on golf.
All right, let's talk about a little more.
Go ahead.
Let's do a little more concentrated picks here. With all these 6K guys, give me a couple that you really want to build around your punts.
Richie would be one. Hearn would be another. And one guy who I didn't mention before, but I think it's kind of interesting, is Nate Lashley. Mm-hmm.
All right. Mine's going to be Jaeger, T-Dunks, Harkins, and Connors, but Jaeger will be my one for sure. And then there's a bunch, though. Like, we could really get weird if, for some reason, you know, Jaeger's going to be 20% owned for some stupid reason. I'll go elsewhere, but I think it's going to be pretty spread out here in the 6K range.
Yeah, in the 6Ks, you don't have to worry about ownership at all.
All right. Who's your bust not named Phil Mickelson?
That's the easiest one. I'm sorry I'm going to do this to you, but Ryan Moore.
That's fine. No, I get it. Mine's going to be Adam Hadwin. I just don't trust him at all, but he'll probably go out and win, because he could definitely win in a field like this, but I don't trust him at all. At first looks, as we are doing, what is the core you're looking at this week?
Yeah, so I talked about Varner before, so I'll be on him. I do like Sam Ryder quite a bit. You mentioned him. It's going to be tough, though. I mean, I'm going to figure out if I'm going to play Neiman and kind of dip down, or just stay kind of balanced and go like more maybe answer. Along those lines, but definitely for sure Varner, and most likely Sam Ryder as well.
Yeah, some in that middle range here, like the more I look at my core, I could easily see a balanced lineup coming in. Chris Kirk, Ches Reavie, Sam Ryder, stuff like that I really, really like in a field like this. All right, who do you have winning this thing? this is literally – these are the fun ones. If you want to throw like 10 bucks on a guy here, there, or there, like spread out 100 bucks, if you have 100 bucks to just kill – you can put some long shots out here and see what happens.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'll go HV3, man. You know, stars have been aligning for him for a while, and he's due, I think.
All right, the guy I'm going for is a guy we were on a lot towards the end of last year. I think it's coming. I'm going Chris Kirk. I'm going back to the wagon.
I like it.
He's going to win one soon. You've heard it. We've talked about it. it's coming soon. Hopefully it's this week.
Figure out how to putt.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing is that's a lot of guys in this field.
It's true.
All right, that wraps up the Safeway Open. We'll have another special edition of the Always Pressing podcast recording tomorrow coming out for you on some Web.com graduates interviewing a special member of the Web.com media. So be on the lookout for that. But any final words for the Safeway Open, Jesse?
No, good luck this week. This, like you mentioned before, this is a fun time of year to play. Like I said before, concentrate on getting 6-6. At least that's what I'm going to be doing. And then also, too, one thing you didn't mention is we're going to have a year in review podcast, and that's going to come out probably next week. Looking forward to that really, really, really well. We're going to go back through some like old stuff that people kind of forgot and hopefully make it interesting and fun. So if anybody has any ideas on that, too,
yep, don't go ahead.
Throw them at us.
Yep, go event by event, kind of remind you who won out of nowhere or like, hey, this guy was hot. Just so you know, when we talk about this guy as a West Coast player, here's where we got it from. It's like, yeah. Here you go. It's pretty simple. Stuff like that. And then we have a couple other ideas for other special pods down the road. If there's other things you want covered or you want people talked about that we can maybe get in touch with, we're down to make this a lot more than just your Monday evening, Tuesday morning DFS podcast. We want to talk golf. So let us know. We're having a lot of fun with these little side projects also. With that being said, go check us out on Twitter at AlwaysPressDFS. Jesse is at DFSGolfGods. I am at BDIntric, and this was your Always Pressing PGA DFS preview of the Safeway Open. Catch you guys later. Anybody ever wonder?